Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the next instalment of the True Turf Super Series. We're off to the UK today and speaking with Keith Bergen, who is the head greenkeeper at Eyemouth Golf Club. Keith, welcome to the True Turf Super Series.
Thank you very much, Nick. Thanks for inviting me along.
Yeah, our pleasure. Now, firstly, for those that don't know, Eyemouth Golf Club, whereabouts is it? And tell us a bit about your beautiful facility there.
Yep, so we're located on the southeast coast of Scotland. So we're about 10 minutes from the English border. We're a clifftop links golf course, right on the east coast. The golf course has been built about maybe 27 years ago. We built this sort of new facility here at Eyemouth. What really happened was Eyemouth's a small fishing village. And as the harbour grew, the golf course suffered and lost land. So Eyemouth's currently on their third layout here since it got built, well, since it was founded in 1894. Yeah. And we've had two 9-hole golf courses, and this is us just moved to a new 18-hole golf course 27 years ago. So
yeah, it's great. Yeah. And it's it is certainly, I know on the website it says the gateway to Scotland, which it pretty much is, being on the border there. Pretty much, I think it's probably the first golf course you might get to when you cross the border around Scotland. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And certainly, and we'll show some photos in here as well for everybody looking, but it is certainly very picturesque and overlooking those cliffs there, looking down to the ocean. It's a beautiful spot, but I'm sure probably a little bit extreme from a conditions point of view sometimes.
Yes, so we really suffer with salt burn. Mm-hmm. We're very exposed to a sort of southeasterly wind. And certainly through the winter time, when we get the big storms, we do tend to suffer a little bit from salt burn on our greens that are really close to the sea. So we've got sort of 6, 7, 10, 11, which are almost on the cliff edge. So yeah, we suffer quite a bit from salt burn with that. But it's a really exposed site.
Yeah, and what can you do to compete against that salt burn? What are you needing to look to do to recover, help the grass recover?
So really what we use a lot of penetrant wetting agents through the winter time to try and flush the soil profile through. We also do a little bit of brushing and cutting to try and brush the salt from the surface. But really I don't tend to put the mowers over them too much through the winter time. Just it seems to add a little bit of stress. So hence why we actually roll a lot through the winter time. We find that helps them more than anything, and it just relieves the stress and the sort of disease pressure on the leaf.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I suppose if you're able to roll a bit more and not cutting, it's, as you say, it's I suppose it all comes down to, we've been talking a lot in recent times about, and certainly depending on grass types and times of year and those sort of things, but mowing less and rolling more to give the plant a little bit more of a chance to thrive.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, we cut a 6 mil through the winter time, and we just dropped to 5 mil through the summertime.
Yep.
So really rolling is key for us to keep, to keep the speeds up. But through the winter time, you know, we'll roll at least once a week, you know, sometimes twice a week, and we'll maybe only cut when it really needs to tidy up. So we'll try and, you know, leave the leaf as long as possible through the winter time, and, you know, the rolling helps keeping the speeds up, which makes a difference to the golfers this time of year.
Yeah, very much so, and that's one of those features of rolling, I suppose, is the ability to keep a smooth and true surface, you know, as much as you can, which obviously the byproduct is speed as well, but gives those golfers that satisfaction of knowing the ball starts on the right line and goes the right line, and at a speed that's relative and consistent for them.
That's right. Yeah, no, definitely. And I think you know, we've got really undulating greens here at Eyemouth, and when this golf course was built, they were built with a lot of tiers on it, so, you know, try and keep a little bit of like length in the leaf. That also helps us with this, so the ball doesn't blow in the wind as much on the exposed site. But then the rolling then keeps that speed up and the trueness and the firmness up, what makes a massive difference.
Yeah, and I'm sure it does get windy there. I was there a few weeks ago, just after the BTME, going back to Edinburgh, and I can't remember the name of the storm now, but there was some wind behind that, that's for sure. Any storm that can put snow in Florida and then make its way across the Atlantic Ocean, you know it's got a bit of punch to it, that's for sure. Well,
that's right, yeah. No, that was quite a bad one here, yeah. Luckily, it was from the west direction, so that gives us a little bit of shelter damage-wise. But, yeah, it was a strong one.
I think a few Irish golfers may have just caught the breeze over rather than the local Ryanair flight. They would have got there quicker on that, I think so.
I think so, yeah, definitely, definitely, yep.
So tell us a bit more about the grass type you've got there and you're managing on your greens and through the rest of the course.
We're sort of a fescue bed mix. We're a little bit poor in there. So recently we've been using, obviously, a lot with bent. We find that it's actually surviving through the winter really well, but also a little bit strange, but it's actually surviving next to the sea really well, which is a little bit sort of different. You know, normally it's the fescues next to the sea that survive, but through the last 3 or 4 years, we've done a lot of bent overseeding. And we found that the greens next to the sea are actually really coming out of the winter in better condition than what they were. We still put fescue in, obviously, because, you know, fescue is the seaside grass, really. But we have really found that bent is thriving, actually, on this site. So it really helps to create a tighter profile as well. So, yeah, it's been really good.
So going through that process of looking at overseeding with the bent, was there a bit of a trial plots, or how did you get to that decision of making sure it was the right type of seed for the location?
So we had the rep from one of the grass seed companies come in and we had a look around the seventh green especially, because it's literally right on the cliff edge, and you could see the bent in it, you know, and the bent looked really healthy. So we decided after that, but actually we just overseeded the seaside courses greens with bent. And then we started seeing a difference, and we thought, well, actually, you know what, we'll just do the whole 19 greens, including the putting green with bent, once a year. We've not really got a massive budget here, so we tend to overseed once a year. So we just go for it in sort of July time, try and find a window, and we just overseed with bent. And yeah, the results have been really good, and you know, the sward's really thickening up now with the bent in it, and everybody seems to be happy, especially the golfers, which is half the battle.
Absolutely, it's lovely when a plan comes to fruition. That's for sure.
That's right.
So you did talk about your small budget. You've got a relatively small team with you as well to manage the course, haven't you?
Yeah. So we've only got a team of four. So there's myself as head greenkeeper. I've got a deputy and a sort of greenkeeper mechanic who works 27 hours a week, and an apprentice greenkeeper. So we're not actually. I am the only qualified one at the minute. My deputy was a fisherman, and has worked with me for 10 years now. So he's just kind of grown into the role. And my mechanic was actually a marine engineer, and he just fancied a career change. We're kind of working on a slim team. But my apprentice just turned 18 last week. He's just about finished his level two over here, so which is really good. And to be fair, he's a really good lad. He can pretty much do every job on the golf course now, which is a massive bonus for us. He's never really been a liability to us. He's from day one, he's been on machines cutting, and he can do everything apart from spraying until he gets his qualifications for that. But it's been a massive help for us.
No doubt. And it's great when you can bring an apprentice on into the team as well, because you know, it is a challenging industry we face, and longevity as well in the industry. So we can bring some more apprentices in and train them up and give them the skills that they can get, then turn into a qualified greenkeeper and maybe and hopefully a head greenkeeper down the track as well.
Yeah. I mean, Ben is probably a bit of a different one for an apprentice. He actually got in touch with the club a couple of years ago, wondering if he'd come for a couple of days' work experience through the Easter holidays. And as a committee, they always wanted an apprentice. But because we're such a small team, we don't really have the time to babysit someone. So anyways, we pulled him in for a couple of days. And straight away, as soon as he was here for the first couple of days, he could tell he was really keen. He was really good at handling machines. And I went said to the committee after that I think this is the one. If you want an apprentice, now is the time to act. And they hired him. Well, they took him on for a couple of month trial and hired him after the summer holidays at the school, and he's been here since, and he really has been a great addition to the team. And you know, fingers crossed he keeps going on and progressing the way he is, and you know, someday he'll become a a really good course manager somewhere, or maybe here, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly right. You'll be able to hand the keys over and go and play 7 days a week of golf.
That would be nice, right? That would be really nice.
But it is great when you get someone walking into your team who's got good aptitude, but the right attitude as well at the end of the day, because that really then helps, especially in a small team environment, to make it easier to get the job done.
No, definitely. I mean, he's not really a golfer. He's only just started playing. So to find someone like that is really, really strange, actually, because normally you would think it's a kid who plays golf who wants to work in the golf industry. Yep. But Ben's been really, really good, and he's getting through his college work well. And fingers crossed, he'll pass it then in maybe July, and we'll get moved on to the next step to his education. And he's really been a good asset to the team, and he's made a big difference here.
Excellent. And so from a small team then, you've got 19 greens, 19 holes to look after effectively, or the driving range will throw if you got one of those as well.
Yep.
How do you, obviously coming out of winter now where spring is knocking on the door for you to come, which I'm sure everybody over there is looking forward to. How do you go, from a planning point of view? And we've talked to a lot of golf clubs that are privately owned on this channel. We've talked to some member clubs as well. You've got a committee that's there. How do you manage the expectations of that committee with a small team to get the jobs that you'd like to get done completed?
So we're pretty lucky here. I've played golf here since I was 3 years old.
Right.
My family's lived in Eyemouth. My mum's actually lady captain at the minute. So we've actually, I've known all these members pretty much all my life.
Yeah.
So the expectation from the golfer is actually really, well, I've been saying it's low, they expect everything to be good, but they understand, they know that we're a small team. We know that they just want to get out there and play golf, to be honest, on greens that are good.
That's correct.
On surfaces that are true, but they're not. They're not out there screaming if the greens aren't over 9 feet or if, they're really understanding. And the committee, they back you as much as possible, to be honest. They're never really on your back. I put a winter plan in every year, as everybody will do. And nine times, it's like, yeah, that's great. Just crack on and, get the jobs done. And then coming into spring now, a lot of it on this course is weather permitting. A few years now, the spring's really been non-existent. We tend to get easterly winds, and it just knocks the growth back. Low temperatures, cold, dry. So, if you were overseeding or something, normally it's May time before you start thinking about putting seed in the ground if you want a quick germination. The golfers, as I say here, we play all year round. We're full greens all year round, we're full tees all year round. So really for the golfers, there's not a lot of change. It's literally growing conditions. And then, your definition comes back into the golf course as the warmer weather comes. We always try and keep on top of it. Even today, February, the boys are out there cutting rough, hand cutting greens. We're just getting everything sharpened up for the weekend.
That's good. And being a small team as well, do you sometimes run volunteer days where you do get members coming out and being able to help you, whether it's for a particular project or just something that's an ongoing maintenance point of view?
Yeah, so we have sort of 3 or 4 times a year we'll have a team that come out and divot the fairways. So we normally send an email out to the membership. Basically what we'll try and do is we try and do the front nine one Monday and the back nine the next Monday. And to be fair, we normally get 10 to 12 volunteers out every time, which is really good. And that makes a sort of a big job like divoting the fairways, especially for a team of four, a lot easier. A couple of trailer loads, tractor, and away we go. And, the boys are start at 10 o'clock and they're finished by, 2 o'clock at the very latest.
Yep.
So they don't mind that. A couple of times a year, they're quite happy to come out and help. As far as... we've done quite a bit of drainage work this year on the course, and the member is always a volunteer and asked to come in, and they'll do, just help with the sort of manual tasks, whether it's, raking gravel about, laying the pipe, they're always quite happy to chip in and help out, which is really good. And if we do ever have any competitions, this year we've got the Scottish Ladies Senior Open in end of June. So, there's a few members have already said, oh, we'll come out and rate the bunkers and and do anything that we need to do. So yeah, it's really good.
Well, that's great. Well, it's a great event, obviously, leading into that to have a chat about as well, once again, for a small team. We had Corey Finn from Yas Links on the last episode, and he had 120-odd people working for him when he had the Abu Dhabi Championship. Obviously, the Scottish Ladies Open, not quite to that Senior Ladies Open, but it's still a major event for IMOUTH to be to be hosting. So how do you start to plan now? Because when you say, I think you said June. So June's not really that far away when you're talking about May. The weather's maybe starting to improve. So what sort of things are you thinking about in how you're going to then present the course to be the best it possibly can be for those ladies that are coming to play?
Yeah, so with the way that we're set up at IMOUTH, we end up having a really, really busy June. We have our club championship runs from the end of May through into June for the championship final day. We have IMOUTH Open that's also in June and then falls into the Scottish Ladies Senior Open. So we really have sort of 3 weeks of major prep for club competitions and then fall into the national senior ladies tournament. So, you know, at the minute, we do a lot of our work through the winter time, top dressing. We put as much sand as we can afford and budget for it on through the winter time. So we don't get in the way of the golfers through the summer time. So we try and get as much as possible done through the winter.
Top dressing, I'm assuming with the budget as well, that's top dressing greens only, or are you doing some tea areas as well? Or
yeah, greens and teas mostly.
Yep.
As I say, we use summer teas all year round. So we try and save one half if you want for the summer. Then we tend to top dress that half that gets played a lot through the winter time just to fill the divots and smooth it off. So we know that when it comes into the start of the season, it's easier to get it to recover and get back in play as quick as possible. For the Scottish senior ladies, they're not asking for a massive amount. You know, green speeds are 9 feet. So you know, we're at that normally anyways. So we'll just keep the mowing up. We'll up the mowing the couple of weeks before it. We've sort of planned a weather weather conditions. If we need some volunteers, I'm friendly with the greenkeepers that are round about. So, you know, we can maybe pull in a couple of their staff for a couple of days if needed. But it just, you know, if it's cold and dry, then we don't need to cut as much. But if it's warm and wet, then, you know, kind of a small team, you really are pushed to the limits when it comes to that. But, yeah, I mean, the course tends to, you know, we try and keep it in as good nick as possible for everybody. Come June, hopefully, it'll be well golf, but it should be ready for the
coming. It will be. And I suppose at the end of the day, though, people just ask for consistency. And if you can do your best with the conditions and provide that consistent consistent environment, then people will go away happy. Absolutely.
No, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, we held last year the Scottish Ladies Team Championships. So that was a good lead in to what we're going to host this time. And I mean, the ladies left last year, you know, raving about the golf course. And, you know, it was really good to see. And hopefully, you know, in June again, they'll leave again and be very happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, as long as you keep the lady captain happy, you'll be all right, won't you?
That's half the battle. Yep.
Well, you said you've been a member at IMOUTH. Oh, sorry, you played golf since you're three. So you're probably always destined then maybe for a career in golf. When did you start to think that greenkeeping and agronomy was going to be something for you?
So I think, you know, through school, I played a little bit of rugby. I played a lot of golf. And I think somewhere in sport was always going to be the job, whether it was coaching at rugby or in greenkeeping, to be honest. And I think I was in fourth year at the high school, so that might have been maybe 15. I'd done work experience at a local golf club just up the road at Dunn's Golf Club and thoroughly enjoyed it. The head greenkeeper there and his deputy, you know, were really, really good with me. They got me involved in a lot of tasks. I was even cutting tees and cutting greens and kind of got the bug for it then, to be honest. Left school when I was 17 and managed to get a job at Gossett Golf Club that's just 20 minutes down the road, working with George Thompson, who had worked there for nearly 50 years, you know. So it was a brilliant place to start. Learned a lot, hard work, but you know, it puts you in good stand, you know. And it was a brilliant apprenticeship. I was there for 9 years, which was really good. And then, you know, George was a course manager that tried to push you on, and you know, it was. I moved on to another golf club, the Hirsel Golf Club, where I was head greenkeeper for a couple of years. And then actually had a little change of career. I actually went to work as a groundsman. So right. I done a year as deputy head groundsman at a private school, looking after the cricket pitches more than anything. So slightly different.
British cricket pitches in Scotland, is that not really not really known, is it?
It's a bit different. It's yeah, so it was a school, so it was a really short 8-week season. But yeah, it was almost the complete opposite, isn't it? You know, you go from trying to relieve compaction as much as possible to you're rolling something to within an inch of its life, basically. But to be honest, after a year there, I realised that, you know, greenkeeping was for me. And then luckily an opportunity came up at Eyemouth, and 10 years.
The prodigal son returned.
Yeah, 10 years and still nudging away. So it's really good. Yeah, it's a.
And you say you love your golf. You get out and play a little bit as well.
Yes. I've not played too much in the last year, but getting back into now. Yeah. So I play in the club competitions here. Nice. You know, and try and get away as much as possible for a wee game of golf other places. And in fact, 5 weeks time we're heading to Turkey. There's 16 of us for the
Lovely.
Club. Going to Turkey for a week's golf. So. Yeah,
sounds terrible. Sounds terrible.
It will be.
Oh, that's great that you get to go with the members as well. And obviously, being well, you're intrinsically linked in there in the club. So I think it's all, you know, you've been there for many years now. Yes. So everyone knows you, which is great. But the ability to go out and play the members competition as well, I think it's great that it gives. Obviously, you see the course as the members see it. You're getting that feedback, or people at least able to have a conversation with you around the golf course as well, around. On what's happening on the course.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as I said, before, that the members are really good here, but it's nice to go out and play with them. You get to see their opinions. You get to see the golf course a different perspective. I'm actually quite good at switching off to a point when I play golf. So I know there's a lot of greenkeepers out there who struggle to play golf at their own course, but I can kind of go out there and enjoy my golf and play my golf with it, with the sort of the side eye of just, you know, keeping an eye out what's going on and making sure that everything looks good for the golfer's point of view. And, you know, the golfers here, they understand, you know, you're out there to play golf, you're out there to enjoy yourself, but they will ask the questions, which is great. You know, and I always say that to them, if there's anything you need, you want to know why we do it or what we're doing this for, just, you know, just ask and, you know, be happy to speak about work. So, you know, it's good to keep them all informed and let them know what's all going on.
Absolutely. And especially if you take the winnings in the weekly comp, that's even better.
That doesn't happen very often. Not anymore.
Well, maybe 2025 is the year for that to occur.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Yep, hopefully. Yeah.
So, once again, just going back to the small team, and we know we appreciate you got an RB70 greens roller off True Turf towards the end of last year. That's obviously with a 70-inch swath. It's there for an efficiency point of view as well as a sustainability. So how's that work for you in relation to you talked about you've got a few swales as well, so getting up and around the greens, but I suppose being able to shorten the amount of time it takes to roll the course as well.
No, definitely. It's been a fantastic investment by the club. We had a sort of, we'll say, third-hand True Turf that had been passed around a few golf clubs, and that kind of inherited it, which got us out. You know, it's a great way to trial something if you want for a small club with not a massive budget. And that, you know, showed the golf club what we could do with that machine. And, you know, it's small, it's still, you know, the finish it gave and the way it followed the contours was tremendous, but just the time it took was just a little bit too long for us. And then we trialed the RB70, and straight away, you know, we saved about 40 minutes at least rolling time. And it followed the contours just as well. And I actually found that our greens sit a little bit proud from the apron, so in the damp, the older one struggled a little bit to get on and off, whereas this new one just it's got a lot better drive to it. It really gets up on and up onto the greens in all conditions, which is really good for us because, you know, at times you just have to get out and roll in the morning. If it's dewy, then it's you're just out there and doing it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the RB70 has been a game changer for us. It's
That's great.
It's
and finding that extra 40 minutes, I suppose, as you say, when there's only a small team, it doesn't matter, even if you're a larger team, to be able to find 40 minutes to an hour and a half in the day, it allows you to maximise your time out there and then complete other duties if you need to.
Well, that's right. I mean, we're only, you know, four of us, especially in the summertime where it's going to be a big game changer. You know, we get two mowers out cutting an end, nine each with a roller coming behind, and you know, that boy who's rolling can be on another job before we stop and have breakfast, really, you know, which is really, really good. It keeps us ahead of the golfers. And even at weekends now, you know, we're going to start to roll more rather than cut because we know that it only takes 2 hours, 2.5 hours or whatever it is to roll the greens. Whereas before, you know, you were keeping over that 3, 3.5 hours. And when you're only in yourself at weekends here, that's quite a long time when you've got like bunkers to sort of touch up and things like that to do. So now we can actually be out there rolling at weekends, which, you know, that helps the speed of the greens massively. You know,
yeah.
I say that to the membership, you know, 2 or 3 cuts a week, but if you ironed 3 or 4 times a week, your green speeds are exactly where they would be, whether you were, you know, cutting 7 days a week. And that's a massive, massive plus for us. And also, you know, disease pressure and stress on the leaf is, you know, for through the summertime is really good.
I was about to ask that about obviously rolling for consistency and trueness and smoothness, but then the aspect of looking at that disease pressure, making sure, and the other thing we find, you know, moisture uniformity across the soil as well. But you obviously touched on it there, but you are seeing that increase in rolling is allow you to have a healthier plant, which then has less disease.
Yeah, no, definitely. We've seen the difference even when using the older one. And hopefully now we've been able to roll more, we'll see an even better disease pressure. And it's been, it really is handy having the roller. You know, you can get out there, and if you're trying to cut the plant at 5 mil or brushing it and cutting it, you know, it all just adds stress to the leaf, whereas you can just give it a roll. You know, you're not cutting it, you can leave that leaf a little bit longer, especially in periods of drought, especially here, you know, if we do have a dry summer, you can just put that, the iron over it, give it a roll, and you know your green speeds are straight up to where you need them to be, and you know you're not having to stress the plant out, which is really good.
People don't think of the north part of the UK, Scotland, as a dry place, but certainly it can get dry over there. How do you go with water and availability of water, especially being on the top of a cliff and right next to the ocean?
Yeah, so we've had a little bit of problems with this. We have an automatic irrigation system on the greens only. But unfortunately our irrigation tank was fed by mains water for a few years, so you know we could really water one day and then it took a day to fill the tank and then we could water the next day, which at times just wasn't enough, you know, and you could water 18 greens and then that was the tank was empty. So 2 years ago now the club invested in a borehole, so we had a company in, we drilled a couple of test holes and eventually found a bit on the site where we could get enough water to keep us going. So yeah, the club, I mean, it was a big investment for the club at that time, but you know, it's been well worth it. Sustainability as well, it means not having to rely on mains water. And what a difference from, you know, almost instantly in the condition of the turf as well, when not using that clean mains water to go and use a natural water source. We started to find that actually the greens were recovering quicker from, you know, from wear and tear through the summertime, especially in the drought. And actually we were getting more out of water than what we were through the mains.
Yeah.
And now we've got enough water that we can, you know, we can water the whole golf course basically. I know hose pipes is the way for greens and fairways, but we can do it, you know, and
that's
been a massive difference for the club.
Yeah. Oh, that's good news. And I suppose, as you say, that different water size, the sanitized mains water that people like to drink versus something that maybe has some good nutrients in it that's adding to that profile in the soil.
Oh, no, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you could, you know, you hear the stories where people say mains water is too clean, and it does. It strips nutrients from the roots. And then all of a sudden going into this new borehole water that has been, you know, it has really been good for us. And you know, as a club, it's good to show that that investment that they made, which for a small club is a substantial investment, you know, pays off. You know, and I know it's in the members then start saying, oh, you know, the Greens aren't as burnt off as what they would be. And you're like, oh, that was your investment. You know, you spent that money on getting what we needed, and you'll reap the benefits from it in the long run, which is really good.
Yeah, exactly right. Do you get out to industry events and or even different golf days to see what else and, you know, broaden your knowledge? Because whilst you've got your apprentice Ben there now, and the great thing about the Golf Superintendent Network is you never stop learning as you go through, and you're always picking up new things that go along. So how do you continue to foster your education and knowledge of the industry?
Yeah, so I attend BTMB every year. So I always come down to the trade show, which is really good. It's a cracking networking space at the Bet. You know, you get to meet everybody who you old faces that you've seen for years, and you always meet some new ones as well, which is really good. As far as the education side, normally we have a Scottish conference every year that Biggar organise. So I always attend that. And actually, this year I've just joined the Biggar board.
Congratulations. I was leading down that path as well. So that's great that you're now putting back into the association as well.
Oh, definitely. It's a really good association. It's great to be involved in. And you know, we just recently had a course walk at Gallon Golf Club just up the road. So that was really good to go and see a different facility and see how they do things, and obviously the Biggar team do things, which is another, you know, that's the best part of this job, where you can go around other facilities, and you know, I think every course manager, head greenkeeper around about will always welcome you, you know, to come and have a look. It's always good to go and see how everybody else do it. Every day's a school day, as they say, so you know, you always learn.
The one great thing about your location is there you've got so many different golf facilities at different levels as well, but people open their doors to enable that discussion and the combination of ideas that can be happening.
Oh no, definitely. And you know, I always try and make the effort to take my apprentice Ben along with me to most of these things, because it's really important that he gets out and, you know, sees how other facilities work. And actually, just before Christmas there, we actually went down to Gozick, Gozick Links, to help Ryan with some turfing jobs, just to give Ben a sort of day's experience of working with a different team, doing sort of a big turfing job that, you know, we might not do here at Eyemouth for budget reasons. So that was good to get him down there and have a day with the lads down there and learn how other jobs are done at other golf clubs, which is good. And as the education, you know, try our best to attend as much as possible, do some online courses. And yeah, hopefully next year, maybe bring my apprentice down to BTME a bit earlier and we'll continue to learn, do some of the seminars and education days down there as well, which is good.
Yeah, excellent. Well, it sounds like you're going to have a busy next couple of months and then an education session as well in Turkey coming up. So that sounds great as well, where you'll be able to learn about the Turkish golf environment. But look, really appreciate you coming on today, and it's been wonderful to hear about your journey in turf and what you're doing at Eyemouth. And we certainly look forward to hearing more about what's going on there in the future. So, Keith, thank you very much for joining us.
No, thank you very much, Nick. It's been great. It's been thoroughly enjoyable. Yep, very good.
Excellent. Thank you.